Good afternoon, everyone. This is the Talk of Chicago, 1690 WVON. We are on iHeartRadio. All you need to do is download the app to your smartphone or tablet and take us wherever you are. You can also go to WVON.com. And, of course, also you can call us direct, 773-591-1690. And you can get social, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Well, America's Heroes Group, engaging, empowering, connecting, and transforming veterans by being the hub to veterans affairs, information, resources, and referrals. And we are proudly sponsored by Attorney Steve Seidman of Seidman, Margulis, and Fairman, LLP at 20 South Clark Street, 2 First National Plaza, Suite 700, Chicago, Illinois, 60603. Toll-free number is 888-837-3275, and the office is 312-781-1977. America's Heroes Group is also proudly sponsored by the AARP Foundation, 222 North LaSalle Street, Suite 760, Chicago, Illinois. The office number, 312-660-8662. Also, America's Heroes Group, sponsored by Pearl's Place Down Home Southern Cooking, 3901 South Michigan Avenue, Chicago, Illinois. The phone number, 877-275-5852. And, of course, we have a buffet there on the last Saturday.
Every month,
absolutely. And we have our roundtable here today. I am pleased, of course, to be the host. And our website social media producer is Manny Corazzari. Our executive producer, Glenda Smith, our co-producer, Sean Claiborne. We are pleased to have the Colonel, Dr. Damon Arnold is with us.
Hey, how are you doing?
How you doing? Rochelle Crump is here. Rochelle, how are you?
Greetings.
Good. And, of course, our attorney, Ernesto Borges. So,
good afternoon. Great.
Good.
How are you?
Good. Sean, you didn't say anything.
How you doing?
Okay. And Glenda, you didn't say anything either.
Bless. Thank you.
Thank you.
Rochelle.
Thank you so much.
Rochelle,
I said Rochelle first.
Okay.
Oh, you weren't listening.
Oh, excuse me.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why she didn't say
Crump, that's Rochelle. She's running everybody else's business.
Yeah, she's looking around the table, making the next move.
Exactly. So we have a lot to talk about today, as we always do. And, of course, we always ask you to call in if there's something you want to say. 773-591-1690, which is... we always are pleased to hear from people. And we have a news clip, KCTV5, veteran finally wins 10-year battle with the VA.
This is Steve Fisher.
Mm-hmm. I heard a big boom, lots of smoke, high-pitched ringing sound, and then after that, everybody was rushing around the truck to try and get us out of there.
Fisher served three tours in Iraq and survived three roadside bombs. This one
was the worst.
And it separated the entire truck in half. Luckily, everybody did survive, but we were all knocked unconscious and medevaced to Fallujah Surgical.
Fisher says life changed after that blast, so he applied for benefits when he finished his tours. He suffers from PTSD, traumatic brain injury, hearing and vision loss, and nerve.
And here it is, 2018.
Here's the timeline. Fisher first applied in 2007. It took 2 years for the VA to approve some claims. That kicked off a long appeals process as Fisher's file bounced from Washington, D.C. back to the regional level twice. As time passed, medical records became outdated.
So I had to go to all those exams again, do everything over again.
Fisher describes a frustrating, bureaucratic, never-ending process.
Every time I see a new letter from the VA, it's just I get a sinking feeling. My heart drops, and then once I open the letter, you know, it just every time I've opened it, it just hasn't been a positive outcome at all. It's been it's just been a nightmare.
Over in Vietnam?
He's not alone. Many veterans across the nation report similar problems. Last year, we reported on Phil Nash. He's battling cancer and the VA for benefits.
We have to fight the compensation to get what we're entitled to.
Here are pictures from his service. In these photos, you can actually see planes spraying Agent Orange. The VA originally approved his disability benefits because his cancer was directly connected to Agent Orange exposure. Phil had surgery and was considered cured, so the benefits stopped. Prostate cancer came back. The benefits did not. Since then, cancer has spread. Nash's case is on appeal. It has taken years. It's still not resolved. He's losing hope.
They say that they're backed up 6 years of claims, and you know, I'll probably be dead in a year and a half because they give me from 6 months to a year to do my life that's left.
I have several friends who have given up, and these are friends that have been in heavy combat. They're missing limbs, they're missing organs from mortar attacks, and they're still having the same issues, basically, that I'm having.
It's these frustrating stories of men waiting years, even a decade, for benefits that finally prompted change. The Rapid Appeals Modernization Program, or RAMP, was launched about a year ago. It promises timely decisions. It will be fully implemented next year. Fisher was part of a select group able to test it early.
I still think I'm dreaming. Yeah, I still think I'm dreaming.
Victory in his battle was a quiet ping, an email alerting him all of his claims were finally approved.
I'm just glad that it's over, but it still hasn't hit me yet. You know, it's still really new to me, but it definitely when I wake up in the morning, I have a smile now, so, which is great.
Other veterans we spoke with remain concerned about the new rapid appeals process, but all they will get is a quick no. Only time will tell how well the new process works and how much time it will take to solve the tremendous backlog. We will keep you posted on Phil's case. Angie Ricono, KCTV 5 News.
That is quite a story. And, of course, we've been hearing that things are improving. Who wants to respond to that?
It's just a travesty that, you know, that soldiers and sailors and airmen fight for this country, and then we want to do a tit for tat as to what type of health benefits and health care they receive once they come back. Mm-hmm. You want to quantify everything and justify everything and see if it's valid or not. When reality is, we really need to get to the point of giving every veteran who served unlimited access to health care, and actually not whether they get it from the private system or they get it from the VA. They should have unlimited access to health care. If they paid that price and made that sacrifice, there's all kinds of health issues that come about from all the experimental weapons that we use, the chemicals that we use, like Agent Orange at the time. There's people that are coming back from Afghanistan and Iraq that were exposed to different chemicals that are coming back down with different ailments. And who knows what will happen when they're in their 70s and when they're in their 80s. Sure. You know, God willing, they live that long. Yeah. You know, so that, I think, will help also this country really consider the cost of war. So we don't just go and wage war for silly reasons, like weapons of mass destruction that we never found.
Thank you, Sean. Dr. Arnold?
Yeah, it's very disturbing to me. You know, I was involved in an IED thing myself when I was in Iraq. It took 12 years for them to test my get my hearing and look at it and say that something's wrong. And, you know, you go through this thing over and over again. I am a physician, and I can tell you that some of the physicians that saw me in the VA system need to quit and need to get out of the business because they are not true doctors. They do not evaluate you the correct way. I've gone into a room where I had an evaluation where I was sitting there in a room with a doctor with no instruments. He didn't know I was a doctor. And he told me, you know, well, your back issue, I'm not here to see you about that. And I'm not here to see you about this. And so what's going on? In 5 minutes, this guy asked me about 15 questions that had nothing to do with why I was there. And then he submits a determination. And they need to get rid of those quacks and get them out of the VA system. Mm-hmm. They need competent doctors, competent professionals evaluating veterans. If you can't get it in the VA, go outside and get your letters. Go to a real doctor and get the right type of diagnosis made so that when you come back, they have to actually acknowledge it and make sure you put that document into the federal system yourself. I had a letter with me, and they did not even take – he didn't take the letter from me, from another doctor. And then he said, I'm not here to evaluate your back. And they came back with the thing saying, oh, well, guess what? He didn't find anything about your back. Because he never looked.
So, he didn't know you were a doctor.
Right, correct.
Wow.
You must have seen the same guy I saw. he didn't even speak to me. I was in there for 15 minutes. He didn't say one word to me the whole time. Then he said, he made one little comment, and then that was it. He didn't introduce himself. He didn't. And the other doctors were great, but this one guy I had was like, I don't know where he got his license from. But, you know, just to say that I applied like a year ago for benefits in, you know, Vietnam, vet, Agent Orange, all the rest, and Purple Heart helps also. But it only took about 7 months, and I got an 80%.
Yeah, I know, you've done well.
And I got a bad check, check, and so I was fortunate, and I didn't – I mean, I know people in the VA, but it wasn't because of any pull I had or anything. I didn't even
– Well,
it just and that's not a normal
But that's
process.
During the fast track. Yeah. Now this fast track happened about
exactly.
a year ago.
And it's not. I come from the era – where I worked for the Department of Veterans Affairs for 23 years. So I come from the era when we used to stack those claims up, when Agent Orange never even had really, like, the study done, where now they can identify those certain disabilities that basically they will compensate you for. So we had all these claims stacked up waiting for direction. These are some of the backlogs that you're still dealing with. Yes. And then what I heard her say, even though she used the word veterans quite a bit, I heard her say men waiting for their benefits. And I'm here to tell you that women are waiting for their benefits as well.
Yes.
A million of them is what I'm going to say because of the fact that when you look at how they're doing this process, the information that they have to get. We even have service organizations that don't even take claims because they say in their opinion that they're not winnable. I said, when do you decide that you're going to win a case? This is not a judge and a jury for a service organization because they don't necessarily work for the Department of Veterans Affairs. And so everybody is not on the same page at the VA. Everybody has their own interpretations of those laws and how they actually matter of fact, how they're actually going to give a disability rating or a percentage for their disability. So to say that you don't think you could win it is a travesty.
Yeah.
And this backlog, I am not surprised for him waiting for 10 years. It makes me angry. It breaks my heart. But I'm not surprised.
Yeah. Is there any difference because of your knowledge and your experience at all, Rochelle Crump, how men and women are treated?
Yes. In fact, there's been actually some
studies
done on it, and also is the government accounting agency went in to track it for women. And what they found is that there were some injustices done, and actually they asked those women to come back if they filed a claim to come back and resubmit their claim so that they can do another adjustment or another moderation of reviewing those claims to make sure that they had done what they were supposed to do initially.
To all of you who made comments, and you've been very strong about it, particularly Dr. Arnold. Can we agree, and of course the consulate, that things have improved?
It seems that my experience.
Well, they certainly are here. We know that.
I'm going to say that they have changed, and there has been some, you know, some great things done to actually change it. But again, I come from an era where we were trained on every single benefit. So they weren't farming out pension benefits. They weren't farming out education benefits. We learned every single VA benefit, and we administered it in one place. Now, because this is how the backlog occurs, too, because you're filing for more than one type of benefit. Number one, if you want to file for compensation and you want to file for pension, well, the pension is in Missouri somewhere or Minnesota somewhere. So once they do this, then they got to, you know what I'm saying? So you're dealing with all of these other separations of where you really need to be concentrating on the whole thing.
Let me ask you something. There is a difference between getting medical services, the one guy was talking about, getting service by the VA, and another is the comp and pen portion now. So some people are people denied actual service, people who have served in the military?
Have they been denied for disability? Not just to be able to go in and get medical care.
Yeah.
Yes, because it all depends on when you serve, where you serve. Right.
So you have to prove that the service is related in order to get.
You still have to go through a process, and you still have those members that are in the VA system when you come in that are unwelcoming. And I have to speak from a women's perspective, too, because I remember standing in line. I was standing behind the gentleman, the veteran in front of me, and then they asked if we were together. I said, why would you think we're together? We never acknowledged that we were together. I'm waiting my turn. You know, so you still got that type of thing going on. You still have those who are one way, and then you still people got been sitting in those seats for 30 days, and it's time to go home. You know what I'm saying?
You know, Cliff, one thing on that, too, just real quick, is that, you know, when people went through this whole process, the thing that gets me that at least we forget, those people who went through that process, a lot of them are already dead. You know, died from suicide, died from things waiting for 10 years. And this is like, it's so fast. You know, 2004, 2005, we were in Iraq, and here we are, 2018. What's happened to those people sitting there waiting for benefits that could have been saved?
Right.
That's true.
That's why I even if things improve, I am still a strong advocate for them to get their act together quickly.
And also, there's millions of National Guardsmen that can't even get VA benefits. I'm a National Guardsman, can't even use the VA system.
Let's talk about something else quickly before we run out of time on this part of the show. Veterans, military retirees will see a 2.8% COLA boost for 2019. <That's great. laughs> Veterans receiving disability pay and military retirees will see a 2.8% COLA means, of course, cost of living boost starting in December, their largest increase in 6 years. On Thursday, Social Security Administration officials announced that the cost of living adjustment for 2019 for their beneficiaries will be 2.8%, the biggest increase since 2012. Last year, the increase was 2%, and the previous 3 years were only 2% combined. So under current law, annual cost of living increases are automatic for Social Security benefits, meaning the executive branch can exact them without intervention from Congress. Certain other federal benefits, such as military retiree pay, are also automatically boosted by that decision.
Sean, can you explain a little bit more regarding the numbers so everyone has a clear understanding?
So the 2.8% increase is an increase that happened for to adjust for cost of living. Now, that translates into for the average recipient for veterans benefits, for people that are receiving disability or retirees for pension, there's about $39 a month. So if you make about $1,500, let's say, for example, that could be about $500 a year or about $48 a month roughly. So that is what that translates into. One of the key provisions that we want to take a look at is also how it affects Medicare and also Medicare supplements, because you have Part A and Part B. Those also have increased for this year. The great thing about this particular increase, it only went up by $1.50. You're paying only $1.50 more for your Part B Medicare supplement starting in January of 2019, which is great.
Very good.
Let me just say this, and it's sure, it's Rochelle. Great that they're doing that. Okay, mm-hmm. So a scenario is this. If you are a veteran and you're receiving compensation benefits and you own your own home, so the property taxes in Illinois has gone up how many times?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay,
oh, yeah.
So three mm-hmm. times. Okay, so you're still not where you could be right. in terms of payments for the payment that you're receiving from the VA versus your property tax going up mm-hmm. to $300 mm-hmm. in which then you're not in that category where your
unless
taxes,
you're 70% then you don't have to pay
you.
Any
That's
property
what I'm saying.
Taxes
if you're
yeah.
not there and you're still in the short end of that, then this 2.8 is going to help you tremendously.
Mm-hmm. Right. But one thing to keep in mind also, which a lot of retirees always are concerned about, is the fact of how does the inflation rate actually translate into what you're getting in Social Security. People that strictly depend on military retirement, the cost of living has actually increased. When you look at what's called the Consumer Price Index, which is the CPI or the Consumer Price Index, that has outstripped and outpaced the COLA adjustments for Social Security and Medicare benefits and things of that nature. So in reality, when you look at the real cost of what you're spending, for example, you were buying a candy bar for a dollar, and now you're paying $1.50 for that candy bar, but you only get a nickel raise.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Very good. Okay. We will be back with more in just a moment. This is America's Heroes Group. Stay with us.
The Talk of Chicago, 1690 WVON.
America, sweet.
Hi, this is Cliff Kelly, WVON host and honored veteran, inviting you to listen every Saturday from 4 to 5 p.m. as I host America's Heroes Group, where we speak truth to power regarding the treatment of veterans, retired and active, discussing concerns for affordable housing, social services, Medicare, and all services geared toward veterans. America's Heroes Group, where we speak truth to power. Hi, this is Cliff Kelly, the host of America's Heroes Group. If you or a loved one has been injured in an accident or the result of malpractice, you have only one chance to get the compensation you deserve. You need a law firm you can trust with experience and resources who will fight on your behalf. With a proven track record of excellence both in and out of the courtroom, call Seidman, Margulis, and Fairman at 312-781-1977 for a free consultation, or visit SeidmanLaw.net. That's Seidman, S-E-I-D-M-A-N, law.net.
Hi, I'm O.S. Owen, the volunteer recruiter for the AARP Foundation Experience Corps. AARP Foundation is proud to partner and sponsor America's Heroes Group. Hey, Cliff, veterans matter, and they're one of the great pillars of our communities across this great country.
As a veteran and host of America's Heroes Group, I totally endorse AARP Foundation Experience Corps volunteer in guiding the next generation of readers.
We both agree veterans would make great volunteers for our children.
Hi, I'm Cliff Kelly, veteran and host of America's Heroes Group.
Hi, I'm Chuck Bourne, veteran and advisory board member of America's Heroes Group. Veterans, family members, and community.
Please join America's Heroes Group every last Saturday of the month for a buffet dinner at Pearl's Place, starting at 6 p.m. until 7:30 p.m.
We can't think of a better place to eat on Saturday than Pearl's Place.
Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, Snapchat, YouTube. We're everywhere.
Everywhere. Everywhere.
Get social with us. The Talk of Chicago, 1690 AM, WVON. WVON.com.
The website. Check it out.
Thank you.
And we are back. This is America's Heroes Group on Saturday, October 13th, and we are on iHeartRadio, WVON 16A on iHeartRadio. All you need to do is download the app to your smartphone or tablet and take us with you wherever. You can also go to WVON.com, and you can call us direct, 773-591-1690, and, of course, you can get social, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. All right. We are pleased now, and we have our group here, all of our panelists, and we are pleased now, and we're going to talk about something that I didn't even know. Well, let me say this. I just had some erroneous information about some people who have served, and they have some problems that I didn't know about. With us on our live line, we are pleased to have Susana Sandoval. She is the United Nations Human Rights Commissioner, and we are pleased to have her on to discuss the National Deported Veterans Rights Tour. Ms. Sandoval, thank you so much for being with us.
Hi, Cliff. Good to hear your voice.
How you doing?
Doing really well.
Good, good, good. Long time. You're a native Chicagoan, so we're just pleased to have her with us. And, you know, she's run for office. She's done all kinds of things. But tell us about the situation now with the veterans. And you've been with one of the Vietnam War veterans who served in the United States Marines. Tell us about that.
Sure. He's here, and I'm going to let him speak with you as well. But just
very briefly,
we just left Salt Lake City, Utah. We're headed to Cheyenne, Wyoming. We're visiting state capitals with an RV that's wrapped with the message of stopping the deportation of our military veterans. This has been going on for quite some time now. Under the former administration, there were different strategies that were happening in order to prevent the deportations of any individuals, but in particular for military veterans. And in April, after a long struggle of trying to get some traction on this issue, we were able to get one of the deported veterans returned back, and that was thanks to Governor Edmund Brown in California, who actually pardoned him. Mm-hmm. The challenge is that I'm traveling with one of the Valenzuela brothers. They're two brothers who have been sharing their experience. And when they shared their experience back in 2009, a lot of other veterans that had been deported reached out to them and started, talking, organizing amongst themselves about their situation. Because when these two vets started sharing their experience, they were able to find out where the other veterans were living, and they were coming out of the shadows in order to help each other. And so in Tijuana, there's a deported veterans house. Actually, there's several organizations now, including the U.S. Unified Deported Veterans Organization, that's doing a fair amount of work across the border, on both sides of the border, in order to ensure that, one, legislators know that this is a real situation, and two, that we need to do something, and there's an urgency to do it. So Valenzuela is here with me as well, so I thought maybe there might be a question you may have for him.
Oh, absolutely. We'll talk to him in just a moment. I just want to ask you, Susana, in my ignorance or erroneous presumption, I felt that if you served in the military, you automatically a citizen. I mean, even if you weren't, that would make you a citizen.
But at least a green card or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe not a citizenship.
Right.
But, you're not going to be deported.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So it doesn't give you any military service. I wish we could say that the United States has a track record of respecting our veterans, and we know that there's a lot of issues with the Veterans Administration in regards to access to medical benefits, and the quality of the benefits as well. But the reality is that a lot of these veterans, a majority of them are from the Vietnam War era, but a majority of them are we just left one in California that is in a detention facility, even though he served in Iraq, Kosovo, in Afghanistan, several tours of duty, unfortunately, were trained to do specific things to protect their freedoms, and yet still find themselves in the conundrum of not having, a full citizenship.
Let me ask you something, Susanna. My name is Ernesto Borges. I'm a Vietnam vet. But you said that Governor Jerry Brown pardoned this vet. Mm-hmm. Was that the only way to get him back in the country? I mean, it took a pardon.
Well,
that's outrageous.
I'm sure that Valenzuela has some choice words for you. There's one way for sure that you're going to come back if you're a deported. Yeah. You're a deported vet. Yeah. One way for sure for you to be returned to this country is if you die. Then you're able to come back
if you die
as a deported veteran. Correct. Wow.
And be buried in a military funeral. Cemetery.
Correct, exactly.
And why hasn't just been? Listen, Susanna, you're very up on politics. In fact, you've even run for the Senate and so forth, the U.S. Senate.
I ran for the Senate before.
I know you did. I know you did. That's what I'm saying. I know you know politics. Why isn't there someone with all of these veterans we have in Congress? This would have been fairly easy to change. This wouldn't be a difficult thing to. I don't see. It might be something that Democrats and Republicans could agree on, notwithstanding our great
divide.
Exactly. True. You know what I mean? I mean, who's going to be against that? So why hasn't that been done? Tell me. You wouldn't know.
This is it. Well, I'll talk a little bit about the last election cycle, only in being pointed about our current leadership at all levels, regardless of party. There are unfortunately economic interests that control the economic agenda that our government helps underwrite. And I will say that very particular. Mm-hmm. So in the last election cycle, we had three senators that were running that could have done something that were running for president. Rubio and Cruz were too conservative and very vocal and being anti-immigrant, even though they were from two states where there's a lot of immigrant
population. Right.
And Senator Sanders, I can tell you that I personally went with a delegation of veterans, including Valenzuela, some from Illinois and some from California, to talk to Senator Sanders and his staff in particular to implore, to beg that, and I'll say I begged, as a civilian, I'm ashamed that we have asked people to serve for us, and now we are deporting them regardless of what their situation is. And so when I found out about this back in before 2009, there were a couple of cases that I had heard of when I was serving on the National Head Start Association board, and we dealt with a lot of mixed status families. And so I didn't hear that, in certain situations. But when I met the Valenzuela brothers in D.C., I was appalled. In particular, because their mother is born in New Mexico, and so
in New Mexico,
yes, in New Mexico, which is part of the U.S.
Yeah, so, right. Obviously,
wouldn't they be citizens?
Well, they were evidently born.
She was born.
She
here,
was born here, but where, were, born, were, they
where
born?
Were they born? Yeah,
yeah. So they were born in Mexico.
That's what I thought.
But regardless,
but still, I mean, if you have an American citizen and State Department or whatever, and they're born in another country. I mean, John McCain was not born in this country, nor was Ted Cruz.
Mm-hmm. Correct. And the question we need to ask ourselves right now, especially in the political climate that we're in, is what kind of leadership are we looking towards? Two, in the situation of our military spending budget, are we willing to continue to spend money to send people abroad to fight for us and to defend our freedom when we can't even guarantee that they'll have access to adequate health care, both for their physical needs and their mental needs?
Well, just quickly, Susanna, Ernesto brought up an excellent point. Since the parent was a citizen, why wouldn't the child
be bestowed upon the child?
Absolutely.
Again, it's a matter of paperwork. Right. They literally, I would rather have Valenzuela answer that.
Okay.
It's an emotional argument for him to do.
I need to ask her a question before she goes away, though. As a veteran, we all go in through a recruiter. So Is that the same process in Mexico where the person went in at? Is that a contract, a different contract than what we do when we go into the service from the U.S. In terms of, you know, they basically tell you, the recruiter tells you about your benefits and everything like that. Is that a different contract that they have?
No. And so just to, for a point of clarification, and then I would like to have Valenzuela answer this directly, since he took that oath for on our behalf.
Sure.
So the question is that these gentlemen have served with the, under the same contract. When they raise their hand and they take that oath, it's the same promise that you took.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter. And we as a country have been practicing utilizing folks who are not citizens for years, for decades. In fact, when the U.S.-Mexican War happened, we had Mexicans fighting on the both sides.
Yeah.
You know, regardless of status.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's way back in 1848.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Cliff, one of the things
is,
you know, when I was serving in Iraq, I was with the 111th Aviation, and these were dedicated people from the Puerto Rico who were serving. Mm-hmm. And the way that we treated Puerto Rico, it's, I think there's a racial overtone here too.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that we treated those people who were in Puerto Rico, it burns my heart every day when I think about what they're still going through. And if these people who are in the service, I'm not sure, and maybe Susanna can answer this and Manuel, but what happens when someone served and they got injured? Because I've been hearing them deporting some of the people who have a Mexican ancestry, who served valiantly, but who are found with marijuana in their car. And this is part of the syndrome that veterans go through when they come back from war, PTSD. And it seems like we have a blind eye to what people have gone through. So are they deporting people who have been classified as having injuries as well, who need treatment?
Wow, that's a good question.
Yeah,
that's a good question. Do you know, do you have an answer for that, Susanna?
Whether they have service-related injuries?
Yeah.
She's going to lose it.
Oh, yeah, there she is. Okay. Yeah, go
ahead. Yeah, so here I am. The question in regards to how does this happen, how do they fall, you know, out of status, and how is it possible? I mean, we just left a gentleman in Atlanta, California, who's detained. He's been in the detention facility for 9 months without medication. He has 70% disability. He has hearing loss. He had a TBI, traumatic brain injury, you know, from the several tours of duty, you know, that he has served. And his mother, on top of that, was a political refugee from El Salvador. And we have, and Valenzuela and I and a group of other activists from Veterans for Peace and a recently returned deported veteran as well, the second one that has returned, Fabian Rebolledo. We were sitting in a hearing, incredulously listening to the prosecutor on behalf of INS, immigration, asking this man, you know, how is he sure that if he was deported back to El Salvador that his life would be in jeopardy? He served in the military.
Wow.
He served in the military. Right. He served under military contract. Mm-hmm. He gave service to the United States. We have been, some period of history, we have not always, you know, there have been forces, where we've been in different sides of a particular war. So the veterans that are in Tijuana have all complained that they've had people approach them because they served in the military and tried to recruit them to mercenaries.
Sure, absolutely, because they know about their training.
Yeah.
Quick question, does it matter whether they got an honorable discharge or something less than an honorable discharge?
No,
it doesn't matter at all.
Susanna, what I'm going to ask of you is please, because we've got a number of callers that I know you can answer, and I'm not sure that Mr. Villanueva would be able to. Please give us the apology to him, but these questions are things that you would be able to answer to a greater degree than he could. Is that okay?
Sure.
All right, let's take some calls. This is unbelievable. I was totally wrong on this.
Very sad.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's go to Kurt. Kurt, you're on WVON.
Hi. I know time is short. As I understand it, there was a veteran deported here from Chicago. And mm-hmm. the reason how he fell into the system was he had a drug conviction. Mm-hmm. And what they used was that regardless of military service, he was not a U.S. citizen who had a felony conviction. Wow. And that was why he was deported. Mm-hmm. How it's going. I think they're winding up in the criminal justice system. And because it doesn't seem like they're just going out. How else would they know?
What was his nationality? Do you know, Kurt?
Mexican.
I believe he was deported to Mexico.
A Mexican.
So Perez. Miguel Perez.
Right. Susana, you know all about that then. Yeah, okay.
He had family and everything mm-hmm. here. And yeah. I think they're still trying to do what they can to bring him back. I don't mm-hmm. know if he's in a relocation center or actually been deported yet.
And he was deported.
John McCain was born in a Canal Zone. Naval hospital, which is American soil.
I know,
Panama.
But Ted Cruz was not. Ted Cruz was born
Cruz's
in Canada.
His mother is American.
I understand. That was my point.
Right, and
that
his
mother was born in the United States. Why wouldn't that be bestowed upon
him? Good point, Kurt. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Okay, anchors away.
Okay.
Must be a Navy guy.
Appreciate it. Let's go next caller, Earl. Earl, you're on WVON. America's Heroes Group. Go right ahead.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure, Earl.
I'll follow up on that because, that last questioner is tying right into what I was going to ask. I was asking whether there are any Caucasians being deported, like from Poland, Warsaw, or Regis, picking out the ethnic groups that are coming from South America or Haiti. Because with this administration, it seems like they're trying to remove as many possible Democrats from voting as possible and trying to remove as many immigrants that are not white as possible. So those were that's why.
But you still have to be a citizen to vote, though.
Yeah.
Hang up and listen to you guys.
Okay. Thank you for your call. Susanna, can you help us with that? Do we know of any Europeans, for instance? Who
yes, we have. We do know of several that have been. It's not just Mexico. I mean, I would say a preponderance of them are Mexican or of ethnic background, like the caller just mentioned.
Sure.
The question that the female host, and I'm sorry, I don't remember your name, but she mentioned the fact, that, people are, there seems to be like an ethnic profiling or racial profiling. And that I would say that there's an institutionalized racism that has been coming out. We saw it happen under the last administration because we had our first black president. We are seeing a preponderance as we're traveling around the country. We're seeing that people are just appalled that, one, this is even happening. Most people, I would probably say that most people, when they consider someone who served in the military and they just think it's crazy that someone who made that level of sacrifice mm-hmm. would actually, be deported. And so, I want to touch on something because this is.
Sure.
I was having a conversation with a CNN reporter. And I think it's really important. The language that we use when we talk about these situations in the media is very important. It is racial profiling. It is institutionalized racism. Mm-hmm. Racism, but there is an issue about even using the word criminal justice system. It's almost ironic because when somebody comes out and has PTSD issues. And I am not a veteran. I am a civilian. When you have been in a traumatic experience, you have issues that happen and social problems happen. And so a majority of these veterans have not received adequate access to health care, both physical or mental. So we're throwing them across the border. A lot of them are in Mexico. We have a deported veterans house over there that was founded by deported veterans. We're helped by activists, both from the faith community as well as other activists crossing the border, bringing supplies, bringing food. Just, an embarrassment to our country that, I have to go to, I and other people have to go and talk to the Mexican government to advocate on behalf of, one, not only these veterans, but imagine the effects on of the, their PTSD on their families. Imagine the effects of PTSD on their children. The lack of being, you know, with both parents and having their families separated. I mean, just think about, you know, one of the questions that we asked in the Obama administration is, you know, you have children. Imagine what it would be like to be separated from your children. Imagine what it would be like to have your spouse with you one day, and within hours, that person is in another country that they're not familiar with.
Ms. Sandoval, there was an article that came out in the Times that said that there are actual veteran, not veterans, but actual service members who were foreign, who were not, you know, U.S. citizens. They were actually quietly being discharged and deported. Have you have any numbers on that, or have you been able to see any of that?
We don't have any numbers on that. That was the same question that CNN asked me. We've been asking within the deported veteran community to help us find folks in that. We know that there are, there have been several, but to find somebody who, one, is fits in that category, you can imagine every case is, you know,
different. But real quickly, though, the people that are being deported, is it because they got some some criminal conduct on their part? Is
like
that
like the drug conviction?
I'm saying, are they deporting veterans who have no criminal background, or are they all people who have subsequently been convicted of some crime?
Okay, so let's go back to the language, the use of language again. So the issue here is that we send people to war.
I understand
freedom,
that.
Right?
I'm just asking what's happening. Is it are they sending non-criminal people back to Mexico or
no human being is a criminal.
I'm saying people who've been convicted. People who've been convicted.
Did they find anything in their history?
Okay, and what about any military or veteran women who may have had children here in the U.S.? Are they being deported as well?
We have several of that fit in that category. Yes. Hmm. We also have current service members that are serving in the military actively, active duty, whose children or someone, family member, or why their spouse has been deported. We have that too.
You know, one thing, have you seen an increased activity with the current legislative landscape with the, you know, Republicans in? What I might also say is that most of them never even served or even thought about serving. There are more bone spurs in that group than anything else. But
so as I stated before, I'm a native Chicagoan, so I'll use that as a disclaimer before I make the following statement. I am one of the women that fasted in front of the White House for 18 days because President Obama, so there was a woman that runs NCLR, she's the president of NCLR, National Council of La Raza, who called him the deporter in chief. Under the Obama administration, we deported over 2 million people, okay? We had a lot of people being deported. What I will say,
Susanna, it's Glenda. Thank you so much. Let us do a follow-up show regarding this because we're wrapping up now. We only have 2 minutes left.
Susanna, thank you so much.
And apologies to Manuel.
Yeah, absolutely. But we needed to keep you on. Just let him know.
And
okay?
Thank him for his service for us.
And thank you for your work on DACA, too.
All right. No, you've given us some great information.
I would definitely follow
up with
you after the show.
We'll be talking back to you, Susanna. And thank you so
much. Okay, thank you so much. All right. Thank you for your service as well. Thank you.
And John, Gregory, Milton, you folks were hanging on the line. We're sorry we didn't get to you, but we wanted to hear what Ms. Sandoval was saying. But thank you so much for calling in, and next time we'll make sure you get to talk on the show. All right.
Any questions regarding affordable housing, social services, wellness cares? As Susanna did, call our office at 312-803-2618, and we're located at 155 North Waco Drive, Suite 4250. Sean, social media.
And also be sure to check out our new website, www.americashg.org. That's americashg.org. And also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and on YouTube. We can see this show and many others that we've done in the past.
Thank you all, and have a blessed weekend.
Thank you, Glenda.
Thank you, Dr. Arnold.